Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. So we went digging into the ground and started to burn.
Yeah, we did. We started to burn too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger. And David Burns, the Solartopia song. We're back for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness show. A full hour, and we have a truly great and unique opportunity today. I am in the home, the California home, where it's 120 degrees outside, of Paul Krasner, the legendary founder of the Yippies in the 1960s, author of God knows how many books. Well, I could actually count them. I'm sitting in Paul's living room here, and I see about 24 books, Sex, Drugs, and Twinkie Murders, Magic Mushrooms and Other Highs, Pot Stories for the Soul, Confessions of a Raving Unconfined Nut, Murder at the Conspiracy Convention, Slow Bicycle Race, the winner of the Slow Bicycle Race, and much, much more. Paul, are you with us here? Paul? Yeah, there you go. You on the phone there, buddy? So I am here in Paul's home, and Paul is on the other phone line about to talk to us about God knows everything since the late 1950s. Paul was the publisher of The Realist, was a founder of the Yippies, as I said, at the Chicago Convention, has been writing, speaking, and entertaining us for 6 decades now, at least. And we just had a good Japanese dinner and settled in for this amazing interview. Paul, you on the line now?
Yeah. I like that interview. That's the best introduction I got since there was a in Montreal. They have the convention of comedians, and I was in the green room waiting with a whole bunch of stand-up comics. And so the MC just came up to me with a little pad and said, "How do you want to be introduced?" I said, "Oh, just call me a social satirist." So about 15 minutes later, it was my turn to come on, and the MC gets there at the microphone, and he says, "Our next comedian is Paul Krasner, a sociopath."
And, well, there you go.
Everything went downhill after that.
All right, so I'm looking here at your book, Impolite Interviews. God knows when it was published, but among the people you interviewed are Woody Allen, Lenny Bruce, who was a good friend of yours, Ram Dass, Jerry Garcia, Dick Gregory, Hugh Hefner, of all people, Arianna Huffington, Timothy Leary, Peter McWilliams, George Lincoln Rockwell, the infamous Nazi, Terry Southern, Alan Watts, the great Buddhist, Mort Saul, the great pioneer, comedian, Norman Mailer, Ken Kesey, Joseph Heller, Dick Gregory, an amazing, you've had an incredible life, Paul Krasner. I mean, it's just, you are a national treasure, and it's just really fantastic that we have this hour together. So there are two burning historical questions that I have to ask you, and we talked about them at lunch. You said you were going to reserve your answers and let your subconscious rule through them. So let's go with the first one. We're talking about LSD, and I have a history book coming out in which I make the assertion that there are very, very few things in history, certainly in the history of this country, that have had a bigger impact than LSD. And you were right there present at the creation of the introduction of LSD into the youth culture, which really, it's a question which came first, LSD or the youth culture. Certainly they were bound together. Now my understanding is that Ken Kesey first got, the author Ken Kesey, who wrote One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Sometimes a Great Notion, both of which became great motion pictures, but certainly One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a major cultural influence. Ken Kesey was a writer in a program at Stanford University. And somehow, and this is a question, got LSD from the CIA. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I don't think he knew it was from the CIA. It was, there was a, at a local hospital, mental hospital, they were doing, all kinds of experiments, and they were looking for volunteers to test this drug and to see what happens. And so Kesey volunteered for it just because you know, he had such a huge gland of curiosity, and so he tried it, and it changed his life, I think. He wrote his first book from psychedelia world, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I forget, but it flew over it anyway. when he learned that the CIA had been distributing it for such reasons, He said, "I think I have to better sue if they don't give me veterans' pension." But the interesting thing there, though, is that the CIA's purpose was to deprogram people and then reprogram them into what they wanted to do, you know, as if it were a form of hypnosis. And they wanted to use it as a truth serum. They wanted see if it would just be in favor of the war. But what happened was that young people, this was in the early 60s, instead of doing what the CIA wanted to do with acid, these young people deprogrammed themselves from a society that was inhumane and reprogrammed themselves in their own alternative way of living, and it worked. It was like the CIA was about to, on a tennis game, and they're about to jump over the net to shake hands with the loser. And suddenly the ball goes whizzing by. And what happened was, you know, everybody's personality was the basis of how their trip would be. For example, once I was at Tim Leary's place, and he was on the phone with a stockholder who was, and Leary passed the another phone to me so that I could hear it, and this stockbroker was calling Leary to thank him for turning him on with LSD. It gave him the courage to sell short at the stock market. So you know, that that to me was very significant. So the CIA it backfired on them, because if peace, love, and music, whatever the combination was, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, it was more than that. I mean, it was really the core of a spiritual revolution. And I don't mean dogmatic religion. I mean people could figure out for their own purposes and attempts of what how their relationship would be with the universe, you know. I've heard guru types say how much the universe loves us, you know, but I wish they'd do a better job.
Really?
There were pilots in Vietnam who took acid before they flew in their jets and dropped bombs, And so that was another way. Because whatever you're doing, the process includes that in your trip. And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. So had Timothy Leary? I know this sounds like minutia, but had Timothy Leary had any familiarity with LSD before Ken Kesey got it from the CIA?
How Kesey got it?
Did Tim Leary know about LSD before Ken Kesey got it from the CIA?
I honestly don't know. If he told me, I forgot. But I later on he certainly did, and Leary made up for it by getting people in the media, and specifically and in celebrities in a more general way, who were tastemakers, and so. It was a matter of the best example would be Otto Preminger. Well, the two good examples, one was the publishers of Time and Life magazine, Henry Luce and his wife, Claire Booth Luce. They were the co-publishers of those and other magazines. And Leary turned them on to acid, and they ended up publishing a pro-acid cover story on Life magazine. And I think they, if I recall correctly, they on the cover there was a photo with all kinds of psychedelic vibrations of Ed Sanders from the Fugs. So, you know, they were influenced by the counterculture. And the other one that I recall was Otto Preminger, the director of movies, who he was always a courageous director. You know, he fought to have, I forget which movie it was, but they were going to censor the word virgin or virginity, and he fought them and won. He did in 67 or 68. And he was one of the ones who was treated to acid, and this was acid from liquid acid from a pharmaceutical company that was manufacturing it then for the CIA. It was very elitist, and so it was a matter of. Where was I just? I tripped over my own.
You're talking about Otto Preminger.
So Otto Preminger did this movie called Skidoo. I think it was black and white. It was about on a yacht there were criminals. It was like the mafia. And it had Jackie Gleason. It had Groucho Marx played God. That not the deity, but rather it was short for Godfather. He was a leader of the mafia, and some of these guys got caught and arrested and convicted and were in prison. And somebody else in prison was a hippie, and his girlfriend had sent him a letter, and it was dipped in liquid LSD. And he just put it into the water supply of the prison, and everybody who drank anything started tripping, not knowing where these weird feelings were coming from, and you know there would be very dopey things, like there was a huge guy, a prisoner, and he would say, "I don't know what this is, but I don't want to rape anybody anymore." And everybody was on their trip like that, and so it was. He said, but they were all kind of sweet things that these thieves and murderers had somewhere in their soul, and so it was really pro acid.
Wow. Talking with Paul Krasner, author of innumerable books and a godfather and even a paternal father of the counterculture, founder of Yippies at the Chicago Convention.
Please, excuse me for interrupting, but when People Magazine called me the father of the underground press, and I sent them a telegram. Remember telegrams?
Yeah.
They're gone now. They're in some museum. So I sent them a telegram to People Magazine saying that, why did you publish that? Well, I have to explain. Life Magazine did. No, this was People Magazine. They all said the same thing, so it doesn't make any difference. I feel like I'm getting Trump illness.
Well, we'll talk about Trump in a few minutes.
I dream about him now.
You asked for a paternity test, as I recall.
People Magazine did that, and I demanded a paternity test when they called me father of the, I'm sorry, I did interrupt you. I won't do it again.
No, it's fine, please. You should interrupt, absolutely. So it just occurs to me, writing a history of the United States, that the Central Intelligence Agency actually introduced LSD into the counterculture through Ken Kesey. I mean, of all people to give it to, Ken Kesey was a great writer. He was quite a character on his own right, very powerful, a lot of energy, a lot of personal strength. And could it be that the seminal moment, talk about paternity tests, for the counterculture was when Ken Kesey wandered in off the streets at Stanford University, into a test for LSD that he didn't know was from the CIA, that the CIA was using these tests and prospecting LSD as a potential mind control agent, and he goes off on a psychedelic trip, turns Tim Leary and all these other people on to LSD, and it all came from the CIA. Is that possible?
Well, he didn't know it was from the CIA, and they don't tell him that. They may not even know. You know, the CIA has a lot of front organizations, and they don't say, "Hi, we're from the CIA, and we want to do these experiments." And so, the acid was the trigger to the psychedelic bus further from western coast to the eastern coast. And going across, and this it would stop in all of these different cities, it was like the circus. Kids wanted to go along. It seemed so. It was kind of like advertising what LSD does, because people were dancing and singing in the streets there. It was really like a Disney movie, animated cartoon that had come to life somehow. Only the good parts, of course.
Right, and then you, of course, in The Realist, took the Disney cartoons, and was this before or after you took LSD? At The Realist magazine, Paul Krasner, you took, you had Wally Wood, I guess, who had been at Mad Magazine, do a spread of all the Disney characters having sex, shooting up, smoking pot. Was that before or after LSD?
That was after, a couple of years after. Because, in fact, Walt Disney died on December of 1966. And I went to Disneyland with a few friends, one of whom was a lawyer and his dog jumped into the car at the last minute, so we just took him along. And went into, this was in 1960, no, it must have been after. It must have been early 68. Whenever it was, what we did was to explain to the ticket taker that the lawyer did all this, said that we have his seeing eye dog, and that will enable him. He got permission, and ticket taker didn't know, and so he went through, and then when we got in there, now I should mention that this dog was not like a regular seeing eye dog, and it didn't have this metal brace to hold on to. It was a little Frankfurter type dog, and he had like a twisted leash, a leather leash, and so he was sniffing around to find a place to pee, and didn't know where exactly because Pluto had never peed there. So anyway, this man comes up to him and says, "Sir, you're not allowed to have dogs here." And the lawyer says, "Oh, really? We had permission. Get me the security agent." And the guy says, "I'm the security agent." And so we got kicked out. But I got the money back. And I asked, "Are you closed Disneyland for a memorial when Walt Disney died?" And he said, "No, we did have the flag at half staff." And so I kept thinking about all of the characters that they had no libido. Some of them didn't even have belly buttons, and it was a matter of being very prudish, and especially because they didn't want little kids to see anything. So I can understand it, but I thought that it would be great to have like a good old fashioned Roman binge to liberate these characters and let them catch up on all of the stuff they missed. And so Wally Wood at Mad Magazine, I did a few freelance pieces for Mad Magazine, and the first one was the characters in the back of comic books followed those little ads they had in the back of magazines, and the script was handed to Wally Wood to do, and he really captured that thing. So when I wanted to have this in the Realist, my little old magazine, I asked Wally Wood. But all I told him was just what I said to you now. It was the Disneyland Memorial Orgy, and they're free to do it. And I didn't give him any instructions except to capture that, which he did, and that was in 1967 when I published that in the Realist. And
what was the general reaction? Seeing all these Disney characters having sex with each other, Dumbo dumping on people from the sky, Mickey and Minnie getting it on, Pluto, of course, peeing on something or somebody. What was the public reaction? Didn't you get sued by Disney for this? And by the way, you still have this thing available, right?
What happened was Well, first of all, it was the center spread in the Realist magazine, and in the issue that was notorious, which was called "The Parts Left Out of the Kennedy Book," and that's another story. I don't want to
we'll
go
get to that
on
in a minute.
Tangents. Okay, so he just had these characters. It wasn't blatant. So if you looked at it, and suddenly you would realize. That there's a bunch of little piglets in a daisy chain. And so, do they still have daisy chains?
I don't know.
Well, it's like people in the line at the TSA in the airports, except they're humping each other.
Right. That'll be the next cartoon. I'm sure the TSA will sue you.
So, or else just
arrest you.
Grope me, I guess.
Right.
It was very popular. A lot of people, readers of The Realist, asked if I would make a poster to it for it, which I did. It was in black and white, both in The Realist and in the poster. But in 2005, an artist, a former employee of Disney, he preferred to remain anonymous, and he did it in what he called authentic colors, and did a digital changing it into a magnificent poster. Anyway, yeah, it's now it's larger and on better paper, and people could see it if they wanted. Just take a look at my website, which is Paul Krasner with two S's, PaulKrasner at roadrunner.com.
So, Paul, if people want to order it, and it is quite amazing, it is a historical piece and also hilariously funny. The Disney Memorial Orgy, they can call it, write you it. How do they write you again?
Oh, well, they just go to the website and just click on whatever they want to get. The
Paul
poster.
Krasner, PaulKrasner
at roadrunner.com. The books that you mentioned when you introduced this show, they can get any of those too. So it's a cottage industry.
Yes, and I'm in your cottage here in California, and you're still writing, and it's fantastic. So we have now deduced probably that the Central Intelligence Agency was responsible for introducing LSD to the youth counterculture. I think that's one of the great stories in all of history, the law of unintended consequences. And I will tell you that I was involved in a news service, the Liberation News Service, which I'm sure you remember.
Oh,
and
sure.
We were broken up by the FBI. And as a result of our being broken up by the FBI, half of us from the news service wound up on a communal farm in western Massachusetts. And at this communal farm, which we got to because of J. Edgar Hoover, and we know that J. Edgar Hoover personally supervised the breaking up of our news service, never counting on the idea that we would wind up as a result of it on a commune in Massachusetts. And as a result of that, first of all, we pioneered or helped pioneer the reintroduction of organic gardening, which was not really known to the counterculture, but we were a bunch of hippie refugees, and we decided not to use chemicals, and it became a thing, you know. I won't say we invented organic farming, but we certainly were a part of reintroducing it into the new generation. And we also wound up helping to start the No Nukes movement, because in 1973, the utility came into our town and wanted to build a nuke 4 miles from our house, and there we were, thanks to J. Edgar Hoover. So the CIA basically introduced LSD to the youth counterculture, and J. Edgar Hoover is responsible for organic gardening and for the No Nukes movement. So there you go. What a combination.
That's one of the reasons that The Realist got started. When I was doing these things for Mad, editor would say, "No, it's too adult," and so I went to the publisher, Bill Gaines, and complained to him that I was being censored, and because I wanted to do a thing on stopping nuclear testing, and they were doing funny stuff in the magazines, but it wasn't really political or with controversial things like that. And so Bill Gaines said to me, "Well, you know, we just turned to now a million and a quarter circulation," and I said, "Oh, you know, that they were all teenagers. There was no no satire available for grown-ups. So I said to him, that I understood, you know, I said, I guess you just don't want to change horses in midstream. And Bill Gaines said, not if the horse has a racket up its ass.
And, right.
And that, I still remain in it. That's my mantra, of many mantras. And, not that's opposed to, to mini mantra, which, was being humped by Donald Duck, as I recall. No, Goofy. It was Goofy. Anyway,
Goofy was doing mini.
So I have to not go on tangents.
We like tangents. I like tangents. As I recall, Minnie Mouse in the spread there, which is aptly named, of the Disney orgy was being stuffed by.
Yeah, but that was the tangent.
Yeah, yeah. I think Mickey was shooting up, as I recall. And Minnie was having sex with. Remember who Minnie was having sex with. I do remember that the seven dwarves were climbing all over Snow White. That I remember.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was. It needed no captions, as
right. There was no explanation. And I noticed sitting here in your living room in California that poster is not on the wall. So you have a much more sedate taste in art than the Disney orgy. All right. So listen, we will leave it with the fact that the CIA. I still, you know, it's just so astounding that the CIA. Was responsible for introducing LSD to the youth culture. I mean, there's no doubt that if that's the first time Ken Kesey took acid, and if he did not go in there with the express idea, hey, the CIA is, or hey, there's free acid over here, I'm going to take it. I mean, I'm going to assume that when he went in there as part of this test, that he had no idea what he was getting into. I mean,
Why he did it, to find out.
So Ken Kesey really had not taken acid, and was not saying, hey, I really dig acid, I can go take a trip free over here. This was something he knew nothing about.
As far as I know, that was true, yeah. I mean, that was his first entry into the psychedelic world, and he loved it.
God, that's astounding. That it's just so, so incredible. I mean, there are very few things in human history that have had a bigger impact than LSD. If you look at the Apple computer, if you look at the rise of the personal computer, Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs and Alan Kay and these other people in what's now Silicon Valley, in Northern California, they were all taking acid. And I would like to personally ask Steve Wozniak if he thinks that they could have invented the personal computer without acid. I doubt they could have. I mean, it really took a step outside your mind, as Taj Mahal would say, to begin writing code for these machines. I mean, I think that the computer revolution certainly owes a good deal of its existence to LSD. I don't see how you can deny that.
Early on in the 60s, I assigned Robert Anton Wilson to interview Tim Leary up at his Millbrook Research Center, upstate New York, and it was and I published it on the front cover of the Realist, and it was a beautiful concept about, you know, because they were both interested in the games of life. And how it's important not to get caught on somebody else's game board on the table. So it was with humor and insight and a part of countercultural history. And the headline was and his opening paragraph was that LSD was the psychic equivalent of the hydrogen bomb.
Yeah.
And
well, that is, you know, it's astounding to me that confluence of the Central Intelligence Agency, of all people, bringing LSD to a guy like Ken Kesey, who had
amazing power. I don't think they knew he was getting it, or at least not then.
Oh, no, they had no idea.
They were just getting the volunteers who worked at the hospital.
It's astounding. It's really amazing to me. What an amazing confluence of events. Okay, so that is the ultimate in the law of unintended consequence. So here's another one, question I asked you at lunch. Since I am writing a history of the United States, you of all people, Paul Krasner, the founder of the Yippies, he came to Chicago, as did I. I was much younger, but just out of college. We came to protest the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968 because Lyndon Johnson was president and he was persecuting or prosecuting, however you want to put it, the war in Vietnam. And by this time, Martin Luther King had been killed and Bobby Kennedy had been killed. Lyndon Johnson had dropped out, and the nominee of the party was going to be Hubert Humphrey, who was the sitting vice president, and they were prosecuting the war. And so Abbie Hoffman and you and Jerry Rubin and Dave Dellinger and so many others, Bobby Seale.
Including several of the women there who never got credit for it, you know.
Yes. Name them. I mean, you know.
Anita Hoffman, Judy Gumbo, Nancy Kershaw, Kathy Stream. Many more than that, and it was kind of one of the impulse. And Robin, what's her name? The
oh yeah, I know who you're talking about, but I don't remember.
The feminist leader. She saw this happening, and it was one of the impulses that made her become an activist feminist.
Well, yeah, it's interesting now that you mention it. No women were indicted, and they should have been, by God.
But they didn't get the publicity that the men got, and that's where the media did. But the thing is that it was a connection of there was a sense of community that was growing out of all this. You know, it wasn't just the counterculture. I remember a turning point there was on October 10th, 1966, at the panhandle of the park, Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, at 2:00 in the afternoon that day. There was a huge crowd. Each one had an acid pill with them. And at 2:00 exactly, they ingested it. There were cops there, and they just watched it happen. At 2:00, they would, you know, they couldn't bust them for internal womb or whatever, wherever they would go. It was... But it was one of the things that the Yippies were about, which were a hybrid of the stoned pot smokers and the straight politicos, but they kind of crossed each other at civil rights demonstrations and anti-war rallies and there was this, it was a phenomenon. When I coined the name the Yippies, it was just to label this community, this phenomenon that had no name for itself. But when they learned in the media that the Yippies were coming to the Chicago in Chicago the summer of 1968, and for the convention, and we wanted to do a counter convention, and Ellis and we went to the mayor's office to get a permit for the revolution, and I remember that we didn't see Mayor Daley, but we did see his deputy mayor, and who said to me, as people were filing out, he said to me, "Come on, what are you really going to do in Chicago here?" And I said, "Well, the did you see that movie Wild in the Streets? And if you recall, if you ever saw it, that was where young people, teenagers, wanted to take over the government, and the way they would do that would be to put acid in the local reservoir. And so I said, did you see Wild in the Streets? And the mayor, deputy mayor, says to me, Wild in the Streets? We saw, what was that, Z, I think, the movie about, without the war in, or was it, I forget the name of it.
That's okay.
But it was, huh?
It's all right.
But it was about the underground in, that was, I forget the name. It was, maybe it was around Greece or...
Oh, you mean the one in Algeria, Battle of Algiers?
That was it. Yes, thank you. Battle of Algiers.
Yeah, yeah. That was a nasty. That was a killer movie.
Right, and so they saw this, and they saw this woman who was wearing a burqa going through a security place, and they just, you know, misogynism works everywhere. So she just got in and. Walked into a cafe. She had a bomb underneath her burqa. And the camera looked around, and you would see little children who were eating ice cream cones. And as a viewer, you would know that this place was going to blow up any minute. So that's what they saw. So I think and they took my joke about LSD in the reservoir, they took that literally. They assigned a guard in Chicago to do it.
To watch the reservoir?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so here's the question, Paul. Paul Krasner, the founder of the Yippies. What would have happened in Chicago? We had about 15,000 hardcore anti-war protesters, of which I was one. And we came to Chicago to demonstrate at the Chicago Convention. In 1968. And the demonstrations, of course, blew up, and they got hugely out of hand, and there were pictures, and it really led to the defeat of Hubert Humphrey in 1968, although there's more to it than that, and it went all over the world, and it's one of the major events in all of American history. The question is, what would have happened if the city of Chicago had gone ahead and given us a permit to camp wherever we needed to, Grant Park or Lincoln Park or whatever, and had given us one permit a day to have a march, as was our constitutional right. The First Amendment says we had the right to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. We were entitled to permits. There's no you asked for permit. You went to the mayor's office. You told them basically that we wanted to have demonstrations. They denied us permits, which is ridiculous. What would have happened, Paul Krasner, do you think, if they had actually given us the permits?
You know, when anybody says, what would have happened, you know, it's such a chain of events. So, you know, what would have happened at the convention if Bobby Kennedy wasn't killed? You know, you can go back and back and back. All of these... links in the chain reached the chain that you're asking about, and I thought about it, and that's why I mentioned the, what happened in the deputy's office, because what would happen in what was officially labeled by a government investigation as a police riot, there were informants, there were provocateurs. When the American flag was being pulled down in one of the big parks where it was going to be an afternoon festival, music, speeches, and gung ho, a few of the people there started pulling down the American flag, and they were going to put up, I guess, an anarchist flag, whatever. And but one of them, and who also threw stones at the cops who were seeing this, and they were taking down the flag, and that's what started that particular riot. But the guy who did that was a cop who had let his beard grow for however long it took, so that he could be, and he pretended to be a biker, and he also convinced that to Jerry Rubin. And he offered to be Jerry Rubin's guard, his protector. So and so he heard a lot of these things that Jerry was saying and doing, and Jerry was shocked to see him in the Chicago conspiracy trial when this clean-shaven guy looked pretty familiar. So. So that's another reason that it was irrelevant that they were going to give us permit to sleep in tents on the grass. It was a clash between the hippie movie. And the Algiers movie. So what we saw was of young people taking over who weren't programmed by the government and by other authorities, and the police force in Chicago, they saw this woman who set up a bomb in a cafe with innocent people in it. So that's what they had in mind, and so it was a clash between those two sets of values. So I think that if Mayor Daley had said, "Yeah, let them sleep there," or not, as happened. Because I remember the first, we were just hanging around. We were supposed to get leave at, was it 11? And they started chasing us with tear gas at 5 o'clock. You know, and I yelled at the cops, "Hey, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to give us 6 more hours." But, you know, so I think that would have happened when we were there. Our fantasy was to have rock bands play in an area where we would have booths around the perimeter. It would be information about psychedelics and marijuana, and another booth that had information about the draft. So we had this vision of what it could be like. And that happened the next year in '69 when the Woodstock another thing besides the music was that sense of community that people had. And
so the vision of what was going to happen in Chicago wasn't a mass confrontation with violence and the police. It was just sort of a festival.
That's what our thing was. You know, they asked, we sent out pamphlets that said things like, they'll be screwing in the streets, they'll be putting truth serum in, by young women, from Yippie who would sit next to somebody and drop a truth serum in a reporter's glass. I mean, you know, there was all these things that were made up and were taken seriously, literally, by those who wanted to believe that.
Amazing. We're talking with Paul Krasner, founder of Yippie, author of about 24 books that I'm looking at here in his living room in California. One of the great national treasures of our counterculture era. We've discussed LSD. I want to talk to you real quickly, because I pulled a book off your shelf called Porn Soup. And, you know, porn has really taken over the Internet. I think porn is now a bigger business in this country than actually network television. And here you have in your a chapter here, the month of May is not only National Masturbation Month, it has also been designated Teen Pregnancy Month, Teen Pregnancy Prevention Month. Isn't it encouraging when different causes can work together with such perfect symbiosis? What do you think about the rise of porn in the through the Internet? I mean, I think more people are watching porn now than pretty much anything else. It's an astounding.
Including lovemaking.
Yes, right.
I'll tell you why. I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, it happened when there were just porn magazines. You know, you were never rejected by them. And sooner or later the pages would stick together. Well, I'll tell you, I have very mixed feelings about porn. I worked at Hustler for 6 months, and I learned a lot about it, and then did a column. I did two columns. I did, for High Times, I did one called, what was it?
Well, it was about porn.
The one about porn. Well, this one was about. I got fired by the same magazines in the same week, so I somehow got a couple of them. The other one was a column for AVN magazine that was adult video news, and it was like a journal of a company, and they asked me to do a column, and I said, okay, I'll do it if I can. Call it one-hand jerking, and the editors thought about it and they said okay. So so I learned a lot in my research then, and doing all of that, I have come to have very mixed feelings about porn. On one hand, I'm totally, my life has been based on freedom of speech, and that's a form of speech certainly. Certainly, it's a form of speech more than a corporation.
And yes, so, right. More than Citizen United.
Right, right. Well, that's just a subdivision. And so, you know, if parents aren't trying to block porn out on things, then there are literally now. There's a 10-year-old growing up. And thinking that sex is where a couple is having intercourse, but the man doesn't ejaculate into the woman. He instead finishes. It's called the money shot when an ejaculation is showing. So you're not being cheated when the guy couldn't come. So, but instead of ejaculating in such a powerful moment, these characters, and this is one of thousands upon variations, you know, there were guys who couldn't get an erection unless the woman wore spectacles. You know, I mean, just everybody has their own perversion or at least addiction, and so so there's a 10-year-old kid who's watching and thinks that sex is going to be when he grows up, and it's starting younger and younger anyway. He exits and finishes up by masturbating the sperm onto the women's face. Everybody loves that, right? So
yeah, it's pretty weird. It's a weird phenomenon.
It's a paradox,
what's also weird, it seems to me, is that the most popular, and actually we're to the end here, so I don't know. It's an odd way to end this discussion, but it's become such a, you know, you have been such a crusader for open expression Paul Krasner. Well, I will finish the thought then. What seems to be most popular is lesbian porn. And I have no explanation for that either.
Well, about lesbians?
Yeah, about lesbian porn and why it's so popular. But maybe we'll leave that for another.
It's popular because the man watching lesbians will be busy with himself, watching them, and not having to worry about it. Also, you know, it is educational, too. There are guys who would watch lesbians who weren't very experienced, but would learn what turns a woman on. So in certain educated, you know, there are people who have been married for 40 years and they never even knew what a clitoris was. They thought it was a Greek dog.
Well, since we've at the end here and we're discussing lesbians, I want you to mention a couple words. You wanted to talk about Donald Trump. So along those lines, real quickly, what's your take on the election?
Oh. Well, first of all, Donald Trump is a lesbian.
Okay, can I quote you on that?
Sure.
What
are you going to do to me?
You know, now we're going to get a wave of criticism from lesbians who don't want to be associated.
Well, no, out of context is the thing, though, you know, that only was said in the context of we just talking about men watching lesbians. So a lot of PC now. I'll tell you one bit of PC. Okay, do I have a moment?
Please. Well, you got very quick because we're running out of time.
Then I'll have to answer what your question was. What was your question?
Say what you're going to say, Paul Krasner. We've been with Paul Krasner, by the way. What is your website, Paul?
PaulKrasner.com.
Oh, you know, we're going to have to answer this on our next show. I'm going to have you back. You're fantastic, Paul. Thank you so much, Paul Krasner. PaulKrasner.com. We've been talking with one of the greats of the counterculture. Thank you so much for this. God, the hour flew by. We're going to have to talk to you again, Paul. Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Great having you with me.